on me on Twitter, twitter.com/JasonRants. Again, well, we're going to continue to monitor the rally in Swanton, Ohio with the president. And when he breaks into anything that justifies us breaking out of our normal coverage, we'll do just that. But until then, let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in the classroom?
A Snohomish High School classroom was accidentally exposed to graphic pornography during an online virtual session, one of their virtual classes. And I know I'm not supposed to think that's funny. We're not supposed to. I mean, it's kind of funny.
It's hilarious.
It's very funny. It's mostly because I just picture myself in the class with a whole bunch of troublemakers causing these things. Because in this case, it's part of a coordinated online prank movement called Zoom bombing or Zoom bomb. Something I just learned about because I'm hip like the kids.
Super hip.
If you go on Twitter and you search the hashtag Zoom bomb, you see a whole bunch of students from all over the place. So it's not just in Snohomish County. It's not just in Snohomish High School. It's all over the country. Kids are putting out the client ID and password to their Zoom classes so pranksters can go on and pull these pranks. And a lot of the tweets I saw last week, they're all like, I'm so bored. Please come down. Here's the info. Just do whatever it is you want. Then I saw some people like, hey, I got 20 minutes to kill. I'm happy to Zoom bomb your classroom online. Just give me the details. And so people are obviously passing all of this out. They log on to the Zoom meeting and then they do whatever it is they're going to do. Now, in the case of what happened last week at Snohomish High School, the Zoom bomber showed, according to a parent on a Facebook page, and I confirmed this with them, they saw male-on-male oral sex images and horrifying and vulgar language.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. They went all in. Previously, someone had joined one of the classes, according to the Facebook post, and just told the teacher to shut up over and over and over again until the teacher just booted the person from the actual room. She's like, shut up! Shut up! Shut up! Shut up! And I imagine it took the teacher at least 20 seconds to realize what was going on, and then an additional 20 seconds of shut up, shut up, shut up, until they realized who was responsible and they booted the people from the rooms. Now, I'm told that there's not really a way to efficiently deal with something like this. Like, there are some settings in which you can have people, before they go into the classroom, they go into what's known as a virtual lobby. And then the host, in this case, the teacher of the room, would then have to individually accept people. But obviously, that's not efficient if you're just a couple minutes late because you're having some trouble getting onto the system. So it's my understanding that the school district is like, we'll take care of it when it happens, but we can't guarantee it. We can't guarantee it's not going to happen again.
This restores my faith in the younger generations.
It is. It is funny.
Like, I'm glad that they are evolving their level of trolling with technology.
Yeah.
So, because for so long, these in-person pranks have just, you know, been the norm for way too long. So now that you're seeing them go digital and virtual, everything else in the society is going virtual. So I'm glad that the trolling has gone virtual.
I mean, you shouldn't show porn. But the other stuff
but
is, it's still funny, but you shouldn't.
You're going to get end of the spectrum where it's, you know, a bad joke, raunchy, a horrible joke.
Most of what I've seen has been just vulgar music.
Yeah, that happens.
And that, you know what? These kids are listening to that anyway. And again, it's happening to high school students, if that makes you feel better.
That's the demographic for vulgar music.
Yeah, so they're already in. Now, a good way to get around having to deal with any of this is, of course, reopen the schools. Now, it's not happening in Snohomish County, but apparently in Pierce County, it's becoming more and more official that by the end of this month, so we're talking about just a little over a week, they are expected in the Tacoma Public School District to go back to in-person hybrid learning. The kids like it! Because these kids have been exposed to hardcore pornography in the Zoom bombing. Now, the kids, did you see hardcore pornography on your Zoom class? No! This is okay. That's not appropriate. Get them in the class immediately. The district said they got guidance coming from the Tacoma Pierce County Health Department. And so the current plan has preschool to second graders going back into classrooms by September 28th. So 7 days. third to fifth grade gets to go back by October, and the remaining grades are expected to return by early November. Now, this is safe, this is reasonable, this is responsible, and the kids want it. See? The kids want it. However, there's always someone in the community who thinks it's unsafe, who is outraged by the very idea that people who are way smarter than they are might say it's safe to bring kids back into the classroom. You always got someone like Shirley Jamerson, who spoke to Q13, who's concerned that the kids are being brought in too soon.
There's a lot of concern with what it's going to look like. I'm very nervous as to what it's going to look like when they go in the classroom and really
cleaner.
How safe are they going to be?
Safe.
I personally would have preferred them to just say we're going to do online all year.
Okay, well then you can do online all year. They're not forcing you to go into the classroom, and if you think it's going to be unsafe for your kid, whom you are probably always nervous about because she's got that tone, then you don't have to send your kid in. And then maybe another kid who wants to go, who realizes that they're better served by going in person to classrooms, can maybe get that spot and go a little bit more than other kids. Calling dibs on this kid's spot. And by the way, I do wonder if Shirley has asked her own kids, because she certainly acknowledges that the online learning situation has not been perfect.
It's been pretty crazy.
It's been pretty crazy, and yet you want to keep your kid in that position. And she says she's ready to roll with the punches.
We'll have to see once it starts, I guess.
I mean, again, you don't have to. You can keep your kid home.
She's on every different end here. Like, no, it's crazy, but I guess we're going to have to see how it goes. But I don't want them in the school. But I guess they're going to go anyways.
But like, I mean, she knows they don't have to.
I don't know if she does. I don't know if anyone told her.
You don't think the Q13 reporter, whomever this was who was doing the package, said, just FYI, now that we've got all of our audio and video needs, you don't have to send the kids back. You can just tell them that you're not comfortable. And my assumption is they'll say, oh, okay, stay home.
She'll say, what does optional mean?
Gosh. You can kind of tell, though, she's that mom, right?
Yeah, of course.
She's the kind who goes on Facebook and is all outraged that some vulgar music got played for 13 seconds on her kid's class. And now she's also concerned about sending kids back into the classroom. And so now you're just kind of wondering, well, what is it that you want? Oh, attention. That's what you want. Send the kids back. It's safe. It's healthy. It's healthy for their minds. And that's really what this is about. And of course, and we've talked about this in the past, kids have a better chance of retaining the information when you send them to the classroom. And of course, on top of that, they also just kind of want to hang out with their friends, even if it means they have to wear a mask. We've seen this work around the country. We've seen it work around Washington State. So I'm glad they're going in this general direction. Now, once they get everything confirmed, of course, we'll be delivering that to you. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show, 1-800-465-877 if you want to join the conversation. When we come back, we're going to take you through how the media has been very, very vicious in how they frame some of the Trump supporters. There was an instance over the weekend from the New York Times that is simply outrageous. Can't say that I am surprised. We're going to get into that and so much more. Welcome back to the Jason Ranch Show. Appreciate you guys tuning in. I really do. There are a few stories of covering folks who are passionate about the election in the media, but covering them in ways that I think are patently unfair, or at least political establishments treating these individuals unfairly. And I think one of the most egregious examples I've seen in a long time was this incredibly misleading New York Times story, at least the title. It says, Trump supporters disrupt early voting in Virginia. Now, what does that mean to you? What does it sound like they're saying? Trump supporters disrupt early voting in Virginia. It sounds like they prevented people from voting, right? People showed up early. They wanted to vote. But who got in the way? Those evil Trump supporters. It implies they wouldn't let people vote. Which is funny because when we hear the word disrupt, it can sometimes be used in different ways. When activists disrupt traffic for their marches, it's celebrated. But in this case, where Trump supporters disrupt early voting in Virginia, it is slammed. It turns out they didn't disrupt anything. Not by any reasonable definition of the word disrupt. This is the lead of the story. A group of Trump supporters waving campaign flags disrupted the second day of early voting in Fairfax, Virginia on Saturday, chanting four more years as voters entered a polling location and at one point forming a line that voters had to walk around outside the site. So now you get a slightly different position. They didn't stop anyone from actually voting. They were out there chanting four more years. But now let's go to the third paragraph. It makes it very clear that everything they did is very clearly protected speech. Very clearly. Quote, elections officials said that the group stayed about 100 feet from the entrance to the building and, contrary to posts on social media, were not directly blocking access to the building. But they acknowledged that some voters and polling staff members felt intimidated by what some saw as protesters. By what some saw as they're literal protesters. That's an actual peaceful protest. When we talk about peaceful protests, that's a peaceful protest. And it's the media that tells us over and over, hems and haws, you better make sure you tell the difference between what's a legitimate riot and a peaceful protest. But in this case, they make no attempt to show the difference between a peaceful protest and something that they very clearly imply in the title was some sort of illegal act to stop folks from voting. What they did was a peaceful protest. It is 100% legal. You can't do it directly outside. You have to be within or past 100 feet, which is exactly what they did. So why be so dishonest? Why be so dishonest by the New York Times? What do you think? Here's the president.
It's gotten to a point they're stone cold dishonest. The New York Times is stone cold dishonest.
He's 100% correct. This is so incredibly dishonest. And of course, in a statement we get from Gary Scott, he's the general registrar of the county, citizens coming into and leaving the building did have to go by them. Those voters who were in line outside of the building were moved inside and we continued operations. Some voters and election staff did feel intimidated by the crowd, and we did provide escorts past the group. One of the escorts was the county executive. By the way, you think the county executive, what do you think his politics are? I wonder why he was there. But let's talk about the intimidation factor. So they just had signs, and all they did was chant four more years? How is that intimidating? Seriously, how is that intimidating? Now, my presumption is the people who got upset and felt intimidated, my assumption is they're Biden supporters. Did they still vote? Did they actually get in that line and then vote? Yes, they did. There's not a single instance in this story suggesting that the folks who were there were so intimidated by the small group of what I think was like six or seven people, at least according to one of the photos I saw, simply waving signs and chanting four more years. Brian Graham is the chair of the Fairfax County Democrats. He was also at the polling center. He wrote on Twitter, according to the New York Times, that the Republicans are straight up attempting to intimidate voters at the government center. Really? Is that's intimidating? That's intimidating. In an interview, Graham said he'd, quote, never seen or heard of anything like this happening before. Producer Payton, do you think anything similar has happened in the past?
I'm going to assume that something similar has happened in the past.
Do you think that maybe something more egregious has happened in the past?
I would say, give or take, yeah, I would say yes.
Would you guess that the group involved in doing something more egregious than chanting four more years in the past near a polling station, would it surprise you to find out that they were Democrats?
Ooh, you know, am I surprised? If I'm splitting hairs, I'm a little surprised.
Are you? Are you really?
No, yeah. Not at all.
You shouldn't be. I remember this story very clearly because this was back in 2008, and this was around the Obama election, obviously. He was the presumed winner. Everyone was looking into the polling, and it was like, of course he's going to win. But there was concern via conspiracy theorists that black voters would not have equal access to the polling stations. And so in Philadelphia, around one particular polling station, Black Panthers, armed with, I believe it was AR-15s, they were standing guard, and they were literally intimidating white people from going in to the booth to vote. Because presumably the assumption was that the white people are not going to vote for President Obama, then candidate Obama. Now, this happened under George W. Bush. George W. Bush, his DOJ, pressed charges for voter intimidation because that's intimidating. By the way, not 100 feet away. They were literally standing right in front of the polling station, as I recall, with their weapons. That's different. That sounds intimidating. Now, as soon as Obama took office, they dropped the charges against the Black Panther group. Weird how that works. It's funny that there are so many people who are calling out the president and making the claims that he's the one who is sowing these seeds of doubt in the results of the election, that he is the one who is trying to delegitimize the results because they believe that Joe Biden is going to win the same way they believed Hillary Clinton was going to win. And so at any opportunity, they're going to needle that point. They're going to hit you with that point. Even when any reasonable person can look at what happened, and there's plenty of video available. Plenty of people can look at the video and say to themselves, well, okay, that's not what happened. I seem to recall the last presidential election here in Seattle around one of the ballot drop boxes. There were activists there on Capitol Hill. That's what I remember. I don't know it for certain, but I seem to remember like vague thoughts of that. But I'm assuming that's cool, right? I'm assuming that that's awesome. We go ahead and do that. But if you're a conservative, you're a Trump supporter, oh, no, no, no. You're intimidating with that sign that says 4 more years. Not intimidating? Peaceful protests in which buildings burn down. That's not intimidating. Folks dressed in black block with weapons throwing Molotov cocktails at cops? Not intimidating. Older white dude with a sign that says 4 more years? Oh, my gosh. I couldn't sleep for days after it. Got it. You're listening to the Jason Rancho. When we come back, we're going to finally take a deep dive into the maggot apple crime committed by Governor Jay Inslee. Jason Rancho on AM 770, KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. After a trip to Eastern Washington, Governor Jay Inslee illegally transported apples to the area. Apples that, it turned out, were filled with maggots. And it's more serious than you might think. Joining me on the line to discuss is State Senator Junie Warnick, Republican from Moses Lake. Welcome back to the show. It's been a while.
Yes, it has. Thanks, Jason, for having me. And you started out by saying this is pretty serious, and it is. It's not a joke. Some people are thinking that I'm just being political and poking at the governor for what he did was what he thought was a thoughtful gift.
Yeah.
But we have a law in the state of Washington that says you will not bring homegrown fruit into certain areas of Washington, and that includes almost the entire eastern side of the state. So it is a misdemeanor, and I don't know what the Department of Agriculture is going to do officially about it, but if you pay attention, there's signs on the freeways and mm-hmm. all sorts of areas that say don't bring in homegrown fruit into this area. And so it's serious.
It is.
It could really, really impact our apple crop.
It can. And so I'm hoping you can take us through that, because presumably there's going to be no consequences for this. And to be fair, to your point, he didn't do it on purpose. His intent was,
no.
It was well-intentioned. It is a little bit odd because literally you can go to Wenatchee and get a whole bunch of apples and sort of not break the law. But so take us through why this is such a serious issue. What does it actually mean for agriculture, especially in this case, because there were, in fact, maggots infested in these apples?
Yeah, they're called apple maggots. And if apple maggots infest an orchard or a section of the state, then the apples from that section cannot be, in many cases, exported. And apples are one of the, if not the biggest export from the state of Washington besides our airplanes. And right now, because we're not exporting airplanes, I think they are, the apples are back as the highest agricultural product, right behind potatoes. Mm-hmm. But apples, it's very, very important to keep that area clean. And there's maps on the Department of Ag website showing the quarantine area, apple maggot quarantine area. The majority of it is in eastern Washington. And you were right. There's a lot of apples already there. I think, you know, someone said, and I've said this, it would have been a better gesture to take a little extra time and make apple pie out of those apples that they picked. And I'm just hoping that we can find them all. And, you know, the governor said yesterday in his press conference that he has donated to food banks in the area. I hope he donated cash and not more apples. But it would be very helpful if he could extend extra resources through the Department of Ag to look for those apples that were distributed, because they were both in Whitman County, Douglas County, Chelan County. So we, if
how does one how does one actually do that? Because like, is there a CSI unit for Honeycrisp apples? Like, how do they actually find them?
Well, we have inspectors. We have Department of Ag inspectors, and I think it would be fairly easy to send people to the sites that he visited, find out who received the apples and what they did with them. I know one was a possible long-term care facility, from what I understand, and they may have been mixed with other apples. But the problem is not only finding them, but then disposing of them properly, because you can't just put them in a landfill or a compost pile that is maybe not properly treated. They have to be disposed of properly so that those apple maggot little eggs don't get infested into the soil.
I mean, so, this is just freaking me out, because I barely wash apples before I eat them. So now I just feel like there's maggots inside of me.
Yeah. And to be fair, there was one little boy that said the governor gave him some apples. He ate one. It was really, really good. But then when his dad bit into one, there was one. One that had a maggot in it. So, you know, so it's hard to tell from the outside. So when you eat an apple, I would suggest slicing it open first. But
I have never done that in all my apple eating days. When I get an apple, I just eat it as is.
Yeah. And you know, if you eat an apple that comes from the eastern side of Washington with the grown in Washington sticker, you can be 99% sure that that apple is healthy and does not contain that. So keep eating them the way you'd normally eat them. Just make sure you know where it comes from.
Oh, and now I'm thinking of like juicing apples. Now you got a little maggot juice in there. It's just, oh my gosh. Just joining me, I'm talking with State Senator Judy Warding.
I'm sorry. You know, we have a very healthy apple system, healthy apple industry. And I know this story has made it all over the nation, unfortunately. And so I just want to assure people I'm not doing it to poke at the governor. I'm doing this to make sure that people know our apple industry is very healthy.
Totally.
The apples that we supply for people are very, very healthy. We just don't want to take the chance of having some other infection.
Of course, so, and that's totally
again,
fair.
Make sure Yeah, make sure that the apples you eat come from Eastern Washington, or they have a sticker on them. They say made in Washington or grown in Washington, not made, but grown in Washington. Then they should be from the east side of the state, which is a great place to grow apples.
And if Jay Inslee hands you any fruit, it doesn't even have to be apples. If he gives you a plum, just say no. Just do the right thing and say no. Before we let you go, so real quickly, two other issues. Obviously, you know, wildfires have been pretty devastating in the east side of the state.
They have.
What is the status on the ground right now?
We are looking for donations of grain and hay, donations of fencing material, because a lot of the fires have burned across areas of pasture that ranchers had cattle on, and they are in the process of looking for those cattle right now. So donations really would help, and support for a FEMA designation. That's the Federal Emergency Management Agency declaration. I know the governor did ask for one in Whitman County because of the loss of that community, the Malden community, but Lincoln County, Douglas County, Grant, Barry, Okanagan, all those counties have lost significant pasture land and homes, so we're asking for that designation as well. But it's still very, very smoky over here, so it's difficult to get an airplane up to not only fight the fires, but to look for the cattle that are lost and dispersed. So that's been a serious catastrophe as well. I couldn't believe that storm when it came through.
Yeah, no kidding. And obviously, it seems like now would be a good time for a special session to address some of the recovery that you guys are going to have to deal with. And of course, the governor doesn't want to do that.
Right. And we sent another letter just within the last week. And it was signed by a number of people. I know it was signed by all the Republican senators, and there may have been other signatures. I haven't been able to look to see who else, but I know that there's discussion on the majority side, the Democrat side, saying, "Hey, it's time to have a special session." So we're ready to go to work. We haven't been able to do our job.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, hopefully you'll be able to. I know why the governor doesn't want to. They don't want him. He doesn't want you guys messing with any of his mandates on the coronavirus, but because,
exactly.
This is pretty serious.
And that's, you know, we have a number of proclamations to look at again. We'll be doing that next week. But, you know, the one that I'm most concerned about, too, is the proclamations. We're learning to live with them. There may be some that we could do without now, but it's time to take a real serious look at our budget and the status of the revenue coming into the state. And we need to do that in person. We need to be there to do that.
100%. Well, good luck with that. And, of course, good luck with the recovery.
All right.
We've been talking with State Senator Judy Warnick, Republican from Moses Lake. Thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Jason.
You've been listening to The Jason Rancho. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really do appreciate it. Coming up next, Ben Shapiro.